The following is a Sunday feast lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 10, text number 14. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Hikari. Recorded on January 19th, 2014, in Austin, Texas, USA.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Sarvam Etadritam Manye Yanmang. All right, we'll do it responsibly. Sarvam etat ritam manye yat mam vadasi keshava na hi te bhagavan vyaktim vidu deva na danava. Sarvam etad ritang manye.
Sarvam etad ritang manye.
Yanmang vadasi keshava.
Yanmang vadasi keshava.
Nahite bhagavan vyaktin.
Nahite bhagavan vyaktin.
Vidur deva nadanava. Sarvam etad ritang manye. Yanmang vadasi keshava. Nahi te bhagavan vyaktin. Vidur deva nadanava. Sarvam. All. Etat. This. Ritam, truth, manye, I accept, yet, which, mam, unto me, vadasi, you tell, keshava, O Krishna, na, never, he, certainly, te, your, Bhagavan, O Personality of Godhead, Vyaktim, Revelation, Vidu, can know, Deva, the demigods, Na, nor, Danava, the demons. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O Krishna, this is Arjuna speaking. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. Purport. Arjuna herein confirms that persons of faithless and demonic nature cannot understand Krishna. He is not even known by the demigods. So, what to speak of the so-called scholars of the modern world? By the grace of the Supreme Lord, Arjuna has understood that the supreme truth is Krishna and that he is the perfect one. One should therefore follow the path of Arjuna. He received the authority of Bhagavad Gita, as described in the fourth chapter. The parampara system of disciplic succession for understanding of Bhagavad Gita was lost, and therefore Krishna reestablished that disciplic succession with Arjuna because he considered Arjuna his intimate friend and a great devotee. Therefore, as stated in our introduction to Gita Upanishad, Bhagavad Gita should be understood in the parampara system. When the parampara system was lost, Arjuna was selected to rejuvenate it. The acceptance by Arjuna of all that Krishna says should be emulated. Then we can understand the essence of Bhagavad Gita, and then only can we understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakan Vitam Shcha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pushanyadeshatarine. So here Srila Prabhupada is explaining in his purport the parampara system. What does that mean? That's a Sanskrit word. It means the system of disciplic succession. So what does that mean? It means the knowledge is originally given by Krishna. And Krishna speaks it to his disciple, Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma speaks it to his disciple, Narada Muni. Narada Muni gives it to his disciple, Srila Vyasadeva, who gives it to his disciple and his disciple and his disciple. So it's just like in India, the way they keep the mangoes from getting bruised when they harvest them during the mango season, they station a bunch of workers up and down the tree. One worker will climb way up, he'll grab that wonderful mango and they very carefully hand it to the next fellow. The next fellow. Just like in the military, you have the chain of command. Similar sort of situation, you see. Actually, you're serving the order of the president when you're out there on the front line. But it's coming through the disciplic line, through the chain of command. It's very similar to the chain of command as in the military. But this is a different command. It's not how to fight, how to win a war. This is how to win another type of war, the war against the illusory energy, you see. This is also a war. We're also warriors here, you see. We're fighting against illusion. And we're taking the orders coming down the chain of command. Krishna. So it comes down to our movement is founded by Srila Prabhupada. Actually, it was originally founded by Lord Chaitanya 500 years ago, who is also in disciplic succession. He is Krishna himself, who appeared in the form of his devotee to chant Hare Krishna and spread it all over India. And then his followers, and then he had disciples who had disciples. It finally came down to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who wrote Jai Radha Madhava. Came down to his son, who was also his grand disciple, a disciple of his disciple, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who was the spiritual master of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, who brought the Hare Krishna movement to the Western world. So now, the Prabhupada's disciples are also accepting disciples all over the world. So now we have the next generation coming up, the disciples of Prabhupada's disciples, now in our movement. Most of our members now are disciples of Prabhupada's disciples. The Prabhupada's disciples are a dying breed as we leave our bodies. We're a diminishing number. Every year there's fewer Prabhupada disciples on the planet. But there's a growing number of, there's no new Prabhupada disciples coming. Prabhupada stopped initiating on October 18th, 1977 and instructed his disciples to begin initiating at that point. So, right before he departed. So, now we have an ever-increasing number of grand disciples of Prabhupada, the disciples of Prabhupada disciples, who make up the core of our movement now. Our whole movement is practically grand disciples of Prabhupada at this time. In the future, it'll be great grand disciples, you see. And great as the generations go on, the disciplic section or the chain of command will continue. Prabhupada said for 10,000 years this movement will go on. It's actually predicted this movement will inundate the whole world. Someday we'll actually win this war against Maya. Maya presently has the upper hand. She's in control of the whole planet Earth. The whole planet Earth is under the grip of Maya or illusion. So right now we're the underdogs in this big battle with the material energy. But we have launched a spiritual revolution. We've declared war against the illusion. Prabhupada's our commanding general, and we're his assistants, you see, helping Prabhupada to make this world Krishna conscious. Because actually people are suffering without Krishna consciousness. But why is that? See, the basic premise that modern-day civilization is based on is a false premise. It's, I am this body. This body is me. And the scientists even go so far as to tell us we're not really persons. We're just machines. We're just robots. That's what they actually tell us. They actually state it directly. We're nothing but one famous scientist says, we're nothing but robots. He says, lumbering robots is the exact word he used. That's who we actually are. We're not really people. We're just machines. We're just chemical reactions. You know, that's all we are. It's just like you put some baking soda in a test tube, you add something to it, and it foams up. That's all we are. We're just some kind of chemical reactions. Some kind of complex chemical reactions is all we really are. So it's obvious in that sort of ridiculous, you know, philosophical basis, which is modern civilization is based on this kind of garbage, that people are going to be frustrated. They're going to take guns now. I bet every 2 weeks somebody takes a gun. They go to a school, a movie theater, go to a shopping mall, and they just start shooting because these people are so frustrated nowadays, you see. People are bewildered because they've taught us a false conception of who we are. We don't really know who we are. If I ask you who you are, you'll identify with your body immediately. Well, I'm, you know, such and such guy from such and such place, or such and such girl from such and such place. You see, I'm young. I'm old. I'm middle aged. I'm American. I'm Indian. I'm this. I'm that. It's all based on the body, which is a false conception of the self. So, it's just like, you know. Here you are wearing a green shirt, okay? All right. Now, that's not really you, is it? It's just a garment you're wearing. But this body is also a garment. It's like that shirt is a garment. If I told you, you know, you must be a very good green shirt. You see, you might not be a good green shirt. Now, how can you do that? I mean, it'd be frustrating. Well, I'll try to be a good green shirt because you told me I'm a green shirt. You know, I want to please you, so you tell me I have to be a good green shirt. Well, I'm going to try really hard to be a good green shirt, but I'm trying all darn. I keep trying and trying, and somehow I just can't somehow just be a perfect green shirt. I've tried, but it just doesn't work somehow or other, you see? So we're frustrated. I'm trying to be a man. I'm trying to be a woman. I'm trying to be an American. I'm trying to be an Indian. I'm trying to be a Texan. I'm trying to be a this or that. But it's bewildering because I just can't do it. It's not me. So one actually has to become self-realized. You have to inquire who I am really. Well, that's called self-realization. Who am I actually? And one tries to figure out who am I actually, you know. I mean, you can analyze how you're not really your body because, you know, you were sitting there in a little baby's body, right? 30, 40 years ago. And 20 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever. Now, you were there. But where are the chemicals that made up that body, you see? That little kid's body, it's gone because of this. Every minute the body is changing. Old blood corpuscles are dying off and new blood corpuscles are taking their place. It's going on constantly. Like in the river, there's a constant flow of water molecules through that riverbed. What today we call Mississippi, tomorrow it's Gulf of Mexico. Last week it was Ohio or Missouri. The same molecules have different designations according to where they're situated. It's not really Mississippi River water after all. So what you call you, just a bunch of molecules that are flowing around, that are clustering around the Atma. You see? It's not really you. It's just some chemicals clustering, some molecules clustering around the Atma, the actual self, the spirit soul. Now, as we sit in this room, I'm inhaling, you're exhaling, we're in this way. We're changing, switching bodies to each other right now. So it's part of your body when you walk in the door. It's part of my body right now. You see what I'm saying? Just by inhaling and exhaling, we're switching bodies here. We're swapping molecules with each other. You see? So what? Who are you really? What is the self actually? These questions we have to ask. You see? We have to ask these questions. I mean, I was a college kid, you know. I was on the dean's list for the honors student. I was an honors student in the school, working hard to make good grades, to get a good degree, to get a good job, to get a good wife, to get some good house, to get some good kids, get a good car, and get what at the end? A very nice coffin with first class velvet lining. Wow. No thank you. That is not enough. That's just not enough for me to live for that. I need something more than that. You understand? So the bodily conception doesn't work. It doesn't match with the actual aspirations of the self within. Do you want to die? How about I take a gun right now and put it in your head? Would you like that? No, of course not. Nobody wants to die. But why is death forced upon us? You see? Why? It's not just like you have a desire for water, right? Because water exists. You have a desire for eternity. Therefore, eternity also exists. It's a simple logical understanding. Just as you have a desire for water and water exists, similarly, you have a desire for eternity. Therefore, eternity must also exist despite what these rascal scientists tell us, like Dr. Stephen Hawking. Eternity exists. It's a reality. Otherwise, why would you desire it? If there's no such thing as eternity, why would we desire it? Doesn't make any sense. You see? So we have to use a little common sense and logic and not be bewildered by these scientists who are feeding us this a bunch of baloney. You see? We have to be a little intelligent, use our common sense and realize what's going on here. Wait a minute. Like old Dr. Stephen, everything comes out of absolutely nothing. That's the great conclusion of modern science, according to him. We finally figured it out. Folks, everything comes from absolutely nothing. But doesn't science mean experiment? You're supposed to do an experiment. You study the data. So where's the experiment? You can take nothing and get something out of it. Has any scientist ever been able to do that? I tried it while I was in Kuala Lumpur. I took an empty pot, I put it in the stove, and I went, okay, pop, pop, pop. Not one kernel of popcorn came out of the empty pot. Not one kernel of popcorn. So I'd like to ask you this. If I can't get one kernel of popcorn out of an empty popcorn pot, then how can a universe come out of an empty pot? You see what I'm saying? And they want us to believe that the universe came out of absolutely nothing, a big pop. They call it the big pop or the big bang, you know? They call it the big pop, the big bang. Out of nothing, this big universe just pop. There it was. Hello, here we are, folks. We all popped out of nothing. I mean, it's ridiculous. There's no scientific science. If you actually follow the scientific method, you will see that something comes from something. Just like this microphone came from something, which came from something. This lectern came from something, it came from something. You can analyze everything. I came from my parents, they came from their, you know. You can analyze everything and you see that things come from other things. So when you get to that original thing that sparked off the whole thing, that's called the origin. Now, in many circles, it's forbidden to say the word God. It's considered taboo. You see, you don't say God. It's a taboo word. So we'll say, okay, the source. The source of everything. Everything has a source. It's not sourceless. There is a source for everything. You see, that's all we're really saying. There's a source for everything. If you say there is no God, you're saying there's no source. It all came out of nothing. It's completely unscientific. It's scientific because the evidence shows us things come from things. Everything we can analyze comes from something. So therefore, there's an original something. That is a scientific conclusion. Theism is scientific. Atheism is a bunch of dogma. Mm-hmm. Or they say ballyhoo. Ballyhoo, yeah. A bunch of ballyhoo. Hot air, you know. Science is scientifically, we can understand there is an origin. the theistic conclusion is there's an origin. That's all. That's all theism is really saying. There's an origin for everything. Therefore, theism is scientific and atheism is ne-scientific, which means nescience. There's science and ne-science. It means not scientific at all. It's simply ignorance. But in the schools, you won't hear this. In the science departments, you won't hear this. They feed you all this nonsense about everything came out of a big pop, a big bang. You see? That's what they'll teach you in the schools. This is science. That's what they teach in the universities. That's the standard version in the media, talking about the universe. It's the standard version. It's the gospel. It's gospel. You're supposed to accept it. Otherwise, you're a religious nut if you don't accept it. That's the propaganda. But they're the biggest nuts. Because theism is scientific. Atheism is simply blind faith. You see? So we can understand through logic, and it is confirmed by the by what we are reading here, that chain of command, that disciplic succession, coming down from the beginning of the universe. We actually hear testimony from that person who's the origin of the universe. Now it gets really interesting. You actually hear testimony from that person who's the origin of the whole universe. He actually kindly came to this planet 5,000 years ago and spoke some teachings. It's called the Bhagavad Gita. And he explains in chapter 10, text number 8, Aham sravasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate iti madva bhajante mang buddha bhava samanvataha. I am the source of everything, of all spiritual and material worlds. Absolutely everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Now, this is pretty interesting stuff here. You can actually meet that person. And then you'll know it's not blind faith, you see. You can actually qualify yourself to meet that person. It's not that you can just, you know, get in the car and drive over to his house or something like that. But that person is actually present everywhere, as described in the Brahma Samhita. Ekopisavrasavitam jaganandako tim yachchaktarasti jagananda chayajyaranta andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. He is an undifferentiated entity, as there is no distinction between potency and the possessor thereof. In other words, he and his creation are unalterably interlinked with each other. You see, they're connected. There's no distinction between potency and the possessor thereof. In his work of creations of millions of worlds, his potency remains inseparable. It's the same point made again. He doesn't really get separated from his potency. It's not that he wound up the whole creation and walked away and abandoned it. You see what I'm saying? He and his potency are inseparable. In his work of creations of millions of worlds, he and his potency are inseparable. All the universes exist in him. Now it's really getting interesting. In other words, you can't really separate him from his creation because everything exists within him. There's nothing that exists outside of him. Wow. That's pretty mystical, you see. For me, well, I'm here and everything is outside of me. But when you speak about God or Krishna or Jehovah or Allah, whatever name you want to use from the scriptures, that person includes everything within himself. There's nothing that exists outside of him. But yet he is distinct from everything at the same time. He's distinct and non-distinct at the same time. In other words, it's all his energy, but yet he's the energetic source, and that is his energy. There's the energy and the energetic source of the energy. In his work of creations of millions of worlds, his potency remains inseparable. All the universes exist in him. And the last point is, he is present in his fullness in every one of the atoms that are scattered throughout the universes at one and the same time. And the author of this text, Lord Brahma, says, such is the primeval Lord whom I adore. So this is a person you can actually love him, and even more, just say, like I say, I love you, that's pretty nice, but if I say, I adore you, wow, we're really getting heavy, right? I adore you, you see. So this is the feeling of Brahma for the Supreme Lord, not just, I love you, my Lord, no, I adore you, you see. He actually adores this person who everything exists within him, even Brahma exists within him, and he, so everything exists within him, and he exists within everything. And within every atom he's present. So that Supreme Person who's the origin of everything, he's actually present right here, right now in Austin, Texas, this Sunday afternoon in this room. And even when you go home, he'll be there with you. When you get in your car, he'll be there. You can't go anywhere. That person is not present. The only thing that's separating us is our consciousness is clouded right now. You may say, how it's possible? Well, I tell you, how many radio stations are broadcasting? How many vibration, how many different radio stations vibrations are vibrating in this room right now? Maybe 20, maybe 30. I don't listen to radio to answer that question precisely, but there's maybe 20 or 30 radio shows being that are actually audible in this room right now if you have the proper instrument, namely a radio, to tune into them.
Same thing.
Huh?
For television,
the same thing, except for cable. That's different. But that's why I use radio as an example. But they have broadcast TV as well, where not only you can hear, but you can see it. So the point is, there's all these vibrations in this room right now, and they're fully present. We just have to have the proper instrument to perceive them. You can hear, you know, Martin Luther King's recording of Martin Luther King giving his famous I Have a Dream speech right now. It's vibrating in this room. You just have a radio set to tune into it. You see what I'm saying? So in the same way, Krishna is fully present right here, right now. But more so than just a recording, the original Krishna is fully present. And you just have to have the proper radio set to tune in, the proper radio TV set to tune in. You do already. It's called consciousness. It's a divine gift given to you by Krishna himself. He's given you a receiver, consciousness, through which you can actually experience him at every minute. You can see him, you can touch him, you can feel him, you can talk with him, you can ask him questions, you can dance with him, you can eat with him, everything, Prabhupada says. That Supreme Person is fully present right here, right now. But the only trouble is we're covered by all this material dirt. It's like a mirror that's been sitting there for 5,000 years accumulating dirt. And you go to look at your reflection and you can't see anything except the dirt. So you got to get out that Windex and start scrubbing, you see. So what is the Windex? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. By scrubbing, 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 gradually everything will become very clear, will become clarified, and you'll see Krishna. So then, but you'll never see that nothing that everything supposedly comes out of, because it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. You'll never see it. I don't care how great of a student you become of Dr. Stephen Hawking's, how a devoted disciple of Stephen Hawking's you may become, you'll never see that nothing from which everything came out of, because it's just a hoax. Nothing but a hoax. Nothing but a ridiculous, stupid hoax that everything came out of nothing. They're very proud of being empiricists, but they don't follow their empirical method when it comes to the Big Bang Theory. It's just a miracle. Unexplained miracle. There's no empirical evidence for it at all. So, are there any questions? Yeah.
You mentioned Maya, this world of illusion that we're constantly fighting. So, why Maya is supposed to be a devotee of Krishna's? Why does she give some devotees who are trying sincerely to be better in their devoteeship a hard time? Why does she?
What's her question, Abhacharan? Devi, what's the question?
She says, why Maya is giving the, if a devotee is sincerely trying, then why Maya comes in between to...
Maya is there to actually help you. For some, for a devotee, Maya actually helps you. Sometimes they say that adversity makes you stronger. So for a devotee, maya actually will, just like you make an exam, you know, you take a tough exam and you're in the course at the university, that exam is not meant to defeat you, it's meant to strengthen you in your command of the subject matter. So maya sometimes put the devotees in difficulty not to hurt them, but to help them, you see. So maya is actually the pure devotee, she's described in the Brahma Samhita, that actually she's acting in accordance with the will of the Lord. So if you're trying to become Krishna conscious, maya is actually helping you, even by putting you in difficult situations, maya is helping you to strengthen yourself in Krishna consciousness. Don't add something to that?
Yeah. We are so degraded, we are so much lusting over all kinds of sense gratification. So putting us into difficulty, maya protects us that we can realize it, that this is the not a place for us to reside. And we should be getting out of it. So we should try harder to remain in the our constitutional position, what we are practicing. Not that we, okay, sometimes I got off the track, and if I'm in a good condition, I would like to enjoy this or enjoy that. But that enjoyment is illusory enjoyment, and we can never get to it. And we become bound up in the cycle of birth and death. We think that we are enjoying, but actually we are going to be suffered for the life after life. So any difficulty that comes makes us realize that this is not our place, because this place is full of misery, even if we feel that we are enjoying, but it's full of misery. Because one enjoyment brings another misery, miserable condition. So it is an awakening thing for those who are trying to awaken themselves for that this is not the real place. So maya is not putting us into difficulty. It is that we have put ourselves in the difficulty. That's what Prabhupada says there. Does that make clear,
Jambavati? Yes,
Manjit.
Any other? Yes?
Gurudev, do you think scientists are doing anything useful for the...
What is it?
Are the scientists doing anything good for everybody?
Are the scientists doing anything good for anybody? Actually, the scientists have given us so many technological things that we can use in Krishna's service. I mean, we're taking advantage of their inventions, like this microphone, of the electricity, you know, Thomas Edison invented the light bulb. So we have we're grateful to the scientists for, you know, air conditioning, you know, we're great, heating, you know, central heating, and we're grateful to them for what the things that they that are practical and useful. That we're very grateful for them for that. We thank them. I like my iPhone, you know. It's practical, and I use it in Krishna's service. So I have no problem with with technology. I'm not against technology, but when they try to jump and explain the technology behind the universe completely without any scientific basis and give some false understanding of the origin of a living being, that's another matter. As far as regular technology development, I have no problem with it at all. I use the airplanes. I'm flying all over the world. That's a product of modern day scientific technology. You know, so I appreciate what they've done. But please don't talk beyond your realm of expertise. That's all I'm saying. In their field, they're very good, but stay in your field. You know. Don't jump out of your field into some field where you have no knowledge of someone. Just because people are impressed by your technology doesn't mean you can say anything you want. And if people believe them because they're so enamored by the technology, they'll believe anything that scientists say. They believe them. But we're asking them, please stop this bluffing game. You know, actually, when I was preaching at the University of Oklahoma, OU, back in the early 80s, I had a preaching center. Then my next-door neighbor, actually, he was a physics graduate student getting a PhD, and he told me that how they cheat and lie to get government grants. His professors were falsifying their research reports to the government to get money, for more money out of the government. They were knowingly cheating. He knew they were doing it, and it was considered okay because this is how we get money. They were knowingly cheating. Even he knew, one of the students, that the professors were cheating. You see? Want to add something to that? Okay, you had your hand up. What's she saying?
She's commenting.
Oh, comment. Okay. What was the comment?
Comment was about the Maya, that we past life we did something wrong, so we are getting...
Yes, that's right. That's how we do get reactions for previous sins and previous lifetimes. Actually, it's not bad, because when you suffer some reaction, you're burning off that reaction and you're getting freed from that sin you committed in a previous lifetime. So a devotee doesn't feel bad when something inauspicious happens. He realizes there's actually nothing inauspicious. It's just a matter of perception. If I'm suffering now from some disease, like acute hearing loss or something like that, I'm simply burning off from reactions from a previous lifetime, so there's nothing to be disturbed about it, to be grateful that Krishna has given me a vehicle or a means of burning off my previous sinful activities.
Yes, I mentioned that in a way that Maya is not giving us trouble, but we are putting ourselves in difficulty by doing all nonsense that we are not supposed to do. Because everything what we do without Krishna consciousness, even walking, sitting, we are committing sinful activities. People don't realize these things. That's why Krishna says, do everything that being God conscious only. Then you will be free from all that. But since we didn't know it, we have been committing so much. We say, who is going to see? We have to walk, we have to sit, we have to eat. But without knowledge, if you're going to do all these things, you're going to get reactions. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. It's unavoidable. So in that situation, we have to be Krishna conscious. Then, just like running the red light, ambulance running the red light, because it's authorized by a government. If you run, although it may be emergency or whatever, but if you run the red light, you will be punished. So it is like that. So being God, Krishna conscious, we can walk, we can do, but even the insects can benefit from that.
You were next, Anil.
You mentioned about desiring for eternity. We are all desiring for eternity. Could you expand on that? I didn't fully understand how we are desiring.
You don't understand that you're aspiring for eternity? When you cross the street, do you look both ways to make sure you don't get hit by a car?
Right.
Now do you understand? If I bring a gun right now to put it at your head, but you say, oh, please don't shoot. No, everyone wants to live. Only a few nuts will desire suicide and they get so frustrated. But people want to live. Everyone has this survival instinct. Even a dog or a cat, even an ant. When you put an ant walking on the floor and you put your finger, he goes the other way because he's afraid you're a predator. I'll just crush him with your finger. Even a tree. When I was a kid, we used to go Boy Scout camping with the Boy Scout troop at a place called Joe's Place. It was a ranch. This guy named Joe, he let us stay at his ranch. I noticed in the woods, there was some thick woods there, and I noticed some of the one tree, instead of going up like this, it went like this. It went parallel with the ground until it got to a clear spot, and then it went up. So even the tree has a desire for survival. He was germinated or grew up as a seedling in a place there was no sunlight. So to survive, he went instead of growing straight up, instead of going vertical, he went parallel with the earth until he found sunlight, and then he went up because he wanted sunlight. So even a tree has a desire to survive, you see. The survival instinct is there in all living creatures, you see, because everyone desires eternity. But in this material world, you cannot have it because these bodies are temporary. That means this material world is not our actual home. We are citizens of that eternal realm where everyone lives forever. Is that clear? Okay, you had a question.
Yeah. Why are we punished for previous birth's mistakes in the present birth? Because, you know, the soul...
Why are we punished for previous sins?
Yeah. Why doesn't God punish us in the same birth itself?
So why are we punished?
Why doesn't God punish in the same birth? Why do we have to suffer from past and previous birth?
Why can't we get rid of all of it right now? Sometimes you have too many sins to get free from one lifetime. So they have to carry over to the next. So, Krishna does say the intricacies of action are very difficult to understand. He says that in the Gita. Actually, there's some purpose for that, to help us. The carryover has some purpose. Ultimately, it's all meant for our getting liberated as soon as possible. If there's a carryover, it's for a purpose, to help us get free. In other words, that in one life you're too sinful to have any inclination for God consciousness. Your next life... You suffer in that previous life, and then one also can go to the hellish regions, the Yama Loka, and be punished some more for one's sins. One is punished for that, but then there's some residue. In your next life, you start off more or less with a clean slate. Like babies are pretty innocent, you see. You start off with more or less a clean slate every time you take birth, although there's some residue from the previous lifetime, which is actually meant to help you become serious and sober about why are you suffering when you actually want to be happy. Why are you suffering? And so that residual suffering that you didn't get punished from in a previous life is there to help you to inquire about why am I suffering, so that you can then come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master who then enlightens you actually why you're suffering, so you can become self-realized. So this carryover is actually to help you get self-realized in this lifetime. It's Krishna's mercy. There's some carryover of sinful reactions to help you get sober and serious, so you can look for a bona fide guru to relieve you from your karma. You see, because when you take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, at the time of initiation, you're cleared off from practically all of your sinful reactions at the time of initiation. So that residue of sinful reactions is very good to help you. Seek a spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. Any other questions? All right, you're the next, and you'll be after him. Okay.
How would you comment about the Charles Darwin?
About what?
The Charles Darwin's theory.
Oh yeah.
Darwin's theory.
Well, I'm sure that Darwin came from the monkeys. He even looks like a monkey. But actually, he stole the idea from the Vedas. The concept of evolution is a concept in the Vedas. He twisted it, that's all. The fact is there is an evolution, but it's not, the forms don't evolve, and through the cycle of birth and death, there is an evolution. Beginning with the aquatics, going to the plants, going to the insects, going to the birds, the beasts, and the human beings. There is an evolution through the cycle of birth and death. Somebody is born as a fish, then they're born as a plant, then they're born as an insect, then they're born as a bird, then they're born as a beast, then they're born as a human being. There is an evolution in the Vedic scriptures. It takes place through the cycle, through samsara, the wheel of birth and death. You evolve up through the 8,400,000 species of the cycle of birth and death. So evolution is a Vedic concept. It was not invented by Darwin. He twisted it, that's all. He stole the concept and then twisted it, said actually the forms evolve. But the forms do not evolve. The forms are already set in stone. They're created at the beginning of the universe by Lord Brahma. So Darwin is off the track. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't follow the disciplic succession. He didn't have any.
Yeah, he didn't. See, but basically what Darwin did and what made him big was he gave a way to explain away God. Mm. Science, it was always, up until Darwin, science accepted God. But he gave a way to get rid of God. And because people are becoming more godless as the age of Kali progresses, it was natural that people would be attracted to something which gave them a way to explain away God. So, and therefore Darwin has become very popular because he came up with a way to explain away God. Yeah.
Sir, just a comment. I think my understanding of the scientific method is it's only a theory also. And really, science can never truly prove anything. It's always a theory. And then a scientific...
That's actually correct.
Yes, and a scientific revolution will take place when a new explanation or theory further explains previous anomalies. So even the scientific method itself, which is all, a lot of this is based on, or pharmacy or science in general... If there's another paradigm that better explains that,
yeah,
current scientific method will go away and be replaced by that.
That's a brilliant statement. Now, that's a brilliant statement. Now, consider this point. modern day science is based on the idea that only those things that are empirically verifiable have objective reality. You see, the whole thing is based on that. But is that empirically verifiable? That concept cannot be empirically verified. So the whole thing is built on quicksand. It's built on a false platform. It's like building your house on quicksand. They built a whole system of knowledge on quicksand, on philosophical quicksand. You see, it's not solid. Yeah, it's a brilliant statement you made.
Sir, I think that what you can't see is real. Karma is real. Love is real. That's what is important on this planet. Like Janis Joplin said, freedom's just another word for nothing. Nothing left to lose. It ain't nothing to be free.
See, we can't... You can't even see yourself.
Right.
Can you prove that you exist? The actual self is not even... We can't even see it. He's invisible, you see. The self is a primeval... cognizant particle of indivisible, invisible, infinitesimal, anti-material energy. That's the actual self. So, you can't even see it in our present state. We can't even see ourselves. We just see this covering of the self. We can't even see the self. Prove that you exist. Prove that you're not a figment of my imagination. You see what I'm saying? Can you prove that you actually exist? What is your proof that you exist? You see, the whole way that they try to know things is fallacious. It's based on imperfect senses. Just like I may hear an explosion, and I think, well, I think the car backfired out there on the street, but actually somebody's got shot, somebody was just murdered, and I thought a car backfired. It could be the other thing. Our senses are imperfect. Therefore, because our senses are imperfect, therefore, we have a tendency to be illusion. And because we have a tendency to be illusion, therefore, we make so many mistakes. Just like Gandhi was warned, don't go to that prayer meeting, there's going to be danger. But he went anyway and he was shot dead. you see. So we make mistakes, and in spite of imperfect senses and being illusion and making so many mistakes, we think I'm a big PhD. You see? Big Dr. Frog. You know that story of Dr. Frog? Yeah, Dr. Frog was very proud of his well. He said, "My well is the biggest body of water in the whole universe." Ribbit, ribbit. He declared to all of his students, he had many little frogs that were students, like Freddie Frog and Stevie Frog. He had so many little frogs that were his students. Dodger Frog, you know. So Freddie Frog, Johnny Frog, you know, Billy Frog, so many little frogs were his students. "Yes, Dr. Frog, you're the greatest scholar, you're a Nobel laureate, you're the greatest PhD in the whole universe, and your body of water is the biggest body of water in the whole universe." But little Freddie, he got a little curious. You see, Freddie Frog, one day he just started to go hopping. Hop, hop, hop. He hopped a long, long way. He kept hopping, hopping. He was really curious. And he came across a body of water called the Atlantic Ocean. And he went, "Wow. This completely blows Dr. Frog's well out of the water. I mean, this is, I mean," he got so excited. "I got to tell, it's a great scientific discovery, the Atlantic Ocean." He went hopping back to Dr. Frog in great excitement. Hop, 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 hopping, hopping, hopping. Finally got to back to the Dr. Frog's well. He said, "Dr. Frog, Dr. Frog, guess what? There's a body of water much bigger than your well." And Dr. Frog said, "What are you talking about? You're crazy. My body of water, my well is the biggest body of water in the whole universe." Ribbit, ribbit, ribbit. So Freddy said, "No, Dr. Frog, it's much bigger. It's much, much bigger. You have to believe me. I mean, I can take you there and show you. It's huge. It's so big you can float a ship on it." And so Dr. Frog said, "Well, you know, they can pump up their chest." You know, he said, "Well, is this much bigger than my well?" And Freddy said, "No, Dr. Frog, it's much bigger than that." "Well, is this much bigger than my well?" "No, Dr. Frog, it's much, you can't understand. It's thousands of times bigger than that, Dr. Frog." "Well, is this much bigger?" Dr. Frog was finished. He fell in his well, and that was it. He died in his well. He burst open his thing and he drowned in his well, you see. His chest burst open and he drowned in his well. Dr. Frog was finished. So these modern day scientists, they're like Dr. Frog, you know. They can't believe there's something bigger than their conception. They're so tied into their version of what is real and what's not real. I mean, in every field it's true. They're just like in archaeology. Some lady made a discovery in Mexico of an ancient civilization that went far, far beyond when human beings even existed. According to modern-day archaeology, she had all the scientific data to back up her thing, and she reported to the scientists, and guess what? She lost her career because it didn't match into their paradigm. She had the scientific evidence to prove that human beings existed far, far beyond what modern science says. If it had been a little bit further, it would have been okay. You see? But it was way, way, way beyond what archaeologists says when human beings existed. Therefore, she is rejected, and she lost her career. She lost her job. She lost her career. She can't work as an archaeologist. She had to completely give up her career as an archaeologist because it didn't match their paradigm. Actually, these archaeologists, they have covered up more than they've uncovered through their. They do more covering up than what they've actually uncovered by their digging. There's a book called Forbidden Archaeology. Two of my godbrothers wrote a book called Forbidden Archaeology, which gives the proof from scientific. This is from scientific journals. They have all the proof of all of these discoveries. There was a mine in California. And what they do is they suppress this stuff. If it doesn't match their theory, they suppress the evidence. They bury it somewhere and hope nobody finds it. They bury the evidence. But they did this research. Actually, they were starting to do this book, and what they did, they had a library card for some library in California, and through libraries you can get books from other libraries. So they actually got books from libraries all over the world about archaeological discoveries, and they found documented evidence of some, and they put a huge book together. It's like 1,000 pages or something. Forbidden Archaeology is a huge book with all this research, with the drawings, with diagrams, all the stuff they got out of all these books. Scientists documented their discoveries, and these things are not taught in the textbooks. They're buried away because they don't match the paradigm. So in this way, the scientists are cheaters. If something doesn't match their paradigm, they suppress it because they're interested in name and fame, not in truth. Yeah.
To me, it's been very obvious for a long time that the car is very obsolete. You know, fossil fuels, oil, gas, and that if we had really applied ourselves to other sciences, we would be using other things for fuel. But that's against the current paradigm, to find some alternate source of fuel, because this is what makes money right now. So I think we...
Yeah, the oil in it. The fact is, the petroleum industry is super wealthy, and Mike makes right in today's world. You know, if you have money, you have power, and whoever has the money, they control what's going on, and they have tons of money. They're super, super wealthy, the petroleum companies, and they don't want to give up. You know, so yeah, that's the sad reality. The politicians are just puppets in the hands of the ultra rich. And the ultra-rich are very greedy. They want more wealth. They want more power. And so Prabhupada calls them the vested interests in his books. You see, the vested interests. They're vested in, just like you invest, they're vested interests. They're interested in money, more wealth. So they're actually behind the scenes manipulating the whole culture. You see, the whole thing. The government people are just puppets in the hands of these vested interests. These powerful financial tycoons actually control things from behind the scenes. So, this movement, the Krishna Consciousness movement, is a very important movement because Prabhupada has launched a spiritual revolution to bring actual sanity back to the human society so we can base things on what's actually beneficial for the living entity instead of for all the people, instead of what's beneficial for one person's pocketbook. You see what I'm saying? So, well, there's one invention which is God has already given us. That's the bull. The bull, you see. In the just 100 years ago or so, you know, people were using horses and bulls for pulling the plows and, you know, getting around town. A bullock cart or a horse and buggy, you know, they ate the grass, you see, which grows everywhere. So we've gotten too carried away by the mode of passion. But the thing is, if we go back to a more agrarian society based on the cow and vote, we can still have petroleum cars or whatever they do to find to replace them. You see? Now solar is coming in. And that would certainly be an improvement. They're figuring out how to do it by solar power, which is, the sun has unlimited energy. If it dies out, we won't want to worry about it. We won't be here anyway. But yeah, there are ways certainly to do it because the government is not really free. I mean, just another example, look at the pollution. It's like I heard there was just to consider how many plastic toothbrushes thrown away by Japan, for example. Out in the Pacific Ocean, there's a huge thing of toothbrushes, you know, thousands and millions of toothbrushes thrown away from the Japanese, just floating in the ocean somewhere, polluting the ocean. So just consider just the toothbrushes. What to speak of the water, all the bottled water. The thing is, the technology is there to make these things out of biodegradable substances, but they'll just merge back into the earth. You see? Because they're making money... the people behind this are making money with these cheaper versions, it would be a money-losing proposition from the turn to biodegradable water bottles and biodegradable toothbrushes. There is an example right there. Is it biodegradable? No. But they could make it biodegradable. So you put it in the earth, it just merges back in.
Like India.
But,
India,
yeah.
You used to have everything biodegradable, even though we're drinking cups from the earth.
In India, we still see the signs of a more biodegradable thing.
And they are called the third world.
Yeah, in the third world, in India, you can still go to India and they have, instead of these styrofoam cups, they give you clay pots. You drink out of a clay pot one time and you throw it and it merges back into the earth very quickly and they make more clay pots again. And, you know, you use a clay pot one time and you throw it and they make plates out of leaves. Not some high-tech thing. Just take the leaves and they kind of fiddle sticks and they pin them together with sticks. They take the leaves and sticks and make very nice plates out of them. Still in India, you can pick those up. Instead of getting a styro or paper plate, you can get leaf plates. It's very common. And clay cups and clay bowls, they're fully biodegradable within a day or two. They're completely merged back in. You don't have to wait, you know, 1,000 years for the thing to merge back into the earth. So the technology, you know, but because it's all based on greed and profit, it's not based on common sense. If you had a president who said, okay, we're going to get rid of all these, somebody's running for president, we're going to get rid of all the plastic bottles and just have biodegradable stuff for toothbrushes. We're not going to turn the planet into a waste dump in the next 50 years. We're going to have everything become biodegradable from now on. Would anybody vote for him? Only a few people. Very few would vote for him. You can't even get on the ballot, such a person. You see? You couldn't even get on the ballot. What to speak of get some votes. Couldn't even get on the ballot. So the thing is, the people are so misguided and so much illusioned that it's very difficult in a democratic society to do anything because the people won't vote for you. They won't. So the only real solution is to educate the people. Mass education is required, and that's why Prabhupada has written all these books, and he's ordered us to flood the world with these books, because these books, if people read these books, they'll get some understanding of who I actually am and how we can start to live in harmony with God and with nature once again, instead of this artificial society based on greed, based on exploitation, based on material sense gratification, you see. Our society is based on a false conception of the self, that I am this body and therefore my happiness is to gratify my tongue, my belly, and my genitals as much as possible. That's the whole society is based on this false premise. But actually, I'm not this tongue, I'm not this belly, I'm not these genitals. I'm actually a spiritual being seated inside the body. And what I really need to be happy is to have a loving relationship with that Supreme Person who's the source of all existence and all of his expanded creatures who've come out of him. I need to have a loving relationships. You see, that's what will actually satisfy me, is having love with that Supreme. And automatically from there, I have love for everything that has come out of him, all living beings. Once I love the Supreme, it's like when you water the root of a tree. Where does the water go? Just to the root only? No, it goes to every leaf and branch in the whole tree. So when you give your love to the Supreme Person, to Krishna, Jehovah, Allah, whatever, Christ, whatever you want to call, when you give your love to the Supreme Person, now your love goes to every single living entity throughout the whole existence. Now, when you give your love to the Supreme, now you live in perfect harmony with his creation, you see. So you just have to be, we teach you in the Krishna Consciousness Movement how to be synchronized or in sync with the Supreme Person. How your every thought, your every word, your every deed will be in a perfect state of harmony with him, and therefore you're a perfect lover of him, and you'll be a perfect lover of every single living entity, even your enemies. You'll be the perfect lover of everything, even the ant crawling across your kitchen floor. You'll be the perfect lover of the ant, even the cockroach flying through your living room. You become a perfect lover of even the cockroach, the flying date, you see. Which seems inconceivable, but actually when you love Krishna, you love and understand, this is he's a living entity just like me, but due to his karma, now he's a flying date. He's one of these roaches. You see? And he'll become a human being again in a future lifetime. So let me at least chant Hare Krishna as he goes flying by. Hare Krishna! So you can hear the holy name, you see? That will help him get a human body that much quicker. There was a little, you know, those slugs, those gross things. My god sister Govinda Das, he said, ooh, a slug, yuck. And Prabhupada said, chant to the poor creature. So she was going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, the slug, you know, to help him get a human body that much faster, you see. The Hare Krishna mantra is very powerful. Anybody who comes in contact with this mantra will be elevated in their spiritual evolution, even a little slug or even a tree. If you have a kirtan under a tree, that tree will get a human body much quicker. And once he gets a human body, then he can become self-realized and get out of the cycle of breath and death. Anything you want to add, Devi? Okay. Anything else? Any questions? Oh, okay. Your hand went up first.
How exactly do we qualify to go back to Godhead?
What's the question?
How exactly you qualify to go back home?
How does one become qualified to go back to Godhead? Okay. You have to develop pure love for the Supreme Person. It's called Krishna Prema, pure love for the Supreme Person. That means, like, if you follow carefully the instructions in Bhagavad Gita, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master who probably understands those instructions, then you can become a pure devotee and go back to Godhead. You have to, it really all boils down to one simple thing. If you can be fully absorbed in remembering Krishna at the time of death, you'll automatically achieve him. But that means you have to stop being selfish and you have to become Krishna-ish instead. Instead of thinking of yourself, pleasing yourself, you have to think of pleasing Krishna or God. You see? You have to start meditating like that. Not what will please me, what will please Krishna. That becomes your new theme of your life. Everything I must do, everything I do should be for the pleasure of Krishna. Every thought, is this thought pleasing to Krishna? Are these words coming out of my mouth, are they pleasing to Krishna? Are my activities pleasing to Krishna? In this way, you have to remold your consciousness to do everything for the pleasure of Krishna. Because that's how you'll be able to remember him at the time of death, you see. So you have to be fully, totally absorbed in Krishna consciousness. It's advised, therefore, one should have a spiritual master who trains you how to do that, who teaches you how to take your daily activities, whatever you're doing in your life, how to take your present situation and dovetail it with Krishna consciousness, how to connect it. You see, in any walk of life, one, as a soldier, as a housewife, as a professor, as a assembly line worker, as a student, anybody in any walk of life can, under the guidance of an expert spiritual master, can become pure devotee of Krishna. So you need to read first. Have you read Bhagavad Gita as it is by Srila Prabhupada? So are you chanting Hare Krishna Japa Mala every day? That's what you need to do now. You need to take you're on a vegetarian diet?
Yeah,
you take onions and garlic? Yeah. You need to, Krishna doesn't take onions and garlic. So what you need to do is taper off the onions and garlic. Any food which is vegetarian without onion and garlic, offer to Krishna before you eat it. Gradually give off. Put more asafoetida in it, and then it's okay. You just add some. Forget the onions and garlic. Put some more hing in there, and you'll be happy. You get good taste of the hing. You don't need the onions and garlic. Just put extra hing in there. Take the place of the onions and garlic. You see?
Family members, they want to eat.
Well, you have to cook separately for yourself. Then, if the family, or either, or wean your family too. But don't let your family keep you entangled in the cycle of birth and death. You've had millions of families and millions of lifetimes, and they didn't help you get liberated, nor will this one help you get liberated either. You have to fly your own airplane at the time of death. They're not going to take care of you at the time of death. The time of death, you're on your own. So you need to either wean them or just, you know, cook separately. Or what you can do is you add the onions, you take out, you cook it, and take out your portion and then add put the onions and garlic for their portion.
Offer first to Krishna.
Offer Krishna all of the food, and after it's offered, add your onions and garlic and give it to them. You can do that. It's extra work, but it's going to save you the time of death. So give up the onions and garlic, consuming it, and offer all your food to Krishna before eating. Chant Hare Krishna Japa Mala. The devotees here can get her some japa beads. You have japa beads. So this is what you have to do. It's called Vaishnava culture. God-centered culture. You eat only, you only eat food which has been offered first to the Lord. And he doesn't take onions and garlic. He doesn't take meat, fish, or eggs. But if you'll take vegetarian food without onions and garlic in it, and you offer it to Krishna, then that food becomes prasadam, or sanctified food, like we're serving out tonight for the dinner. And you eat that food itself will elevate your consciousness. It will purify your consciousness. And then you add the chanting to that. So if you study these books regularly, Bhagavad Gita, you'll chant and you'll eat food, you're on the right track. And once you get solidly fixed up, then we can initiate you as a disciple and help you to, you know, do the fine-tuning on the consciousness. But you need to get fixed in a diet of no meat, no fish or eggs, no onions and garlic. Give up intoxication. Gradually, you know, get into it. The devotees will help you. I have initiated disciples here who can help you become fixed up in Krishna consciousness. You just have to ask for guidance and they'll tell you what to do. Yeah, you had a question? Yeah.
One of my colleagues was arguing, saying that the humans were not vegetarians, ancient times, because there were no agriculture. How do we...
Humans were not vegetarians in ancient times because there was no agriculture.
Yes.
It's true there was no agriculture in ancient times. Even the Satya Yuga, there was no agriculture. Everything grew naturally. They didn't have to grow it. It all was there. Just like in the Bible, the Garden of Eden, there was no meat eating in the Garden of Eden, nor was there agriculture. Everything was there naturally. You just ate it. So in the Satya Yuga, there was no agriculture.
I talk about Satya Yuga. In Fiji, 100 years ago, everything was growing naturally. People didn't have to kill anybody. They just go to the forest, get the breadfruit, get the cassava, get everything, and just boil it and eat it.
Even 100 years ago in Fiji, if where she's from, the mangoes were growing wild. You go to the forest, the mango groves, thousands of mangoes growing wild in the forest.
Nobody has to cultivate.
Huh?
Nobody has to cultivate. It's
growing. Just growing naturally.
Okay, very good.
So, yeah, this argument is not very sound. This person doesn't know what he's talking about. This is somebody who's been duped by the scientist. Yeah.
Just a small thing for kids who are here on scientists. We spoke about scientists. So I have read somewhere that towards the end of their life, most of the scientists realized that everything cannot be automatic. There has to be someone behind all this. But this is not made public because of the same reasons which you have told.
What's that one?
Kids can Google and search it. Then they will definitely like it. And also on this nuclear blast, the scientist quoted from Bhagavad Gita, the verse, when that first explosion was made in the present times, he said that people asked him, is it the first time ever in the history of mankind this is happening? Then he quoted a verse from Bhagavad Gita that in the modern times, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I can get that in the next minute.
Can you give me a summary to...
She is saying that before the scientists leave the body, they have realized it, that this doesn't happen. All this thing is by chance. It's nothing happened.
They have, or they should.
They have.
Some scientists have realized these things.
There is one scientist right now in present.
There's one scientist. One scientist has some very good realizations. What's his name? I forget his name. Rupert something. He's saying that science is promoting a religion called materialism, and it's dogmatic. This is Rupert something is his name. He's written a very nice book called Science Something. I forget the name. But there are a few scientists, but he's considered a... Bring my iPhone over here. Is that your iPhone or mine? That's yours? Oh. Yeah, I have it in my iPad upstairs. I have his book actually is in my iPad. It's actually quite a good book because he's saying that this whole idea that he's criticizing that science says that we're just robots, that science says it's all just a big machine. He's criticizing this. So there are some scientists who are, but he's very much criticized by the mainstream scientists. They consider him a kook. They consider him a wacko, a weirdo. They don't accept his legitimacy. He's sometimes being banned. He gave a presentation on something called TED. And then they took his video off. Where is it?
Little bit.
You have Siri in here?
Yeah.
Rupert Sheldrake. That's right. The science, he's had something called the science delusion by Rupert Sheldrake. Yeah, there are some scientists who are breaking free from the stranglehold of the modern day science, but they're being very much criticized as being kooks, as being not legitimate. Rupert Sheldrake, yeah, you can get his book on Kindle and download it into your smartphone. It's really some good stuff in there to read. I recommend that book. Let's see. He has a book called Science Set Free. It's a very, very good book. Science Set Free, it's called. Rupert Sheldrake. I recommend the book. We don't agree with everything that's in there, but a lot of it is in line with what Prabhupada has been saying about the scientists. A lot of it. He's really, in many points, he's really... as we used to say in the 60s, right on. He really hit the nail on the head on a lot of different points. So it's a fact. There are scientists who are speaking out, but they're being very much ostracized by the scientific community. Very much ostracized. But there are scientists like Rupert Sheldrake who are pushing forward, trying to get, convince people how we're being duped by the mainstream science. Yeah, he has what's called the 10 dogmas of modern science. Is the introduction, the 10 dogmas of modern science. So this is really, a lot of it is really good stuff. The 10 dogmas of modern science. The scientific worldview is immensely influential because the sciences have been so successful. They touch all of our lives through technology and through modern medicine. Our intellectual world has been transformed by an immense expansion of knowledge down to the most microscopic particles of matter and out into the vastness of space. Put hundreds of billions of galaxies in what he says is an ever-expanding universe. So... he says, here are the 10 core beliefs that most scientists take for granted. Everything is essentially mechanical. This is his strongest point. Our scientist, ISKCON scientist Sataputta, he has a book called Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science. Modern-day science is mechanistic. It says that everything is essentially mechanical. There's no people out there. It's just all machines. He says, dogs, for example, are complex mechanisms rather than living organisms with goals of their own. Even people are machines, lumbering robots, in Richard Dawkins' vivid phrase, with brains that are like genetically programmed computers. You're not really a person. You're just a machine. Your brain is just it's just a computer. It's not really, you're not really a person. Now, on this first point, it really resonates strongly with our understanding that we got from our spiritual master. His first point is very, very much resonates with when he explains in detail that the fallacy of this core belief. It is very much in line with what Prabhupada has taught us. He talks about the scientific priesthood. In other words, science is like a religion, but it's like a blind faith religion. You have the high priests, and you have to believe. Otherwise, you're considered a fool. So it's very, very. He quite a bit of what he's written is very profound in terms of our understandings. Yeah.
Sir, it seems to me that so many people they want a simple answer,
mm-hmm.
and with this kind of thing, there really isn't a simple answer. So people, with their frustration, they're so disappointed with everything in the material world that they just think, oh, well, God's just another thing that I don't understand, I don't want to deal with, because they're so disappointed in so many things. Or they, want to get some gratification, and then it just is always a mix. There's so much, stress and time and obligations, and they're so disappointed.
Well, this is the beauty of how Prabhupada has presented the science of God. If you study Prabhupada's books, you have Bhagavad Gita as it is?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. If Prabhupada is Krishna, and Prabhupada has helped us understand it, has explained everything, he ties it all together into one neat package. I mean, it's an airtight case for reality. It explains everything that's going on. You take any aspect of what's going on in the world, every single thing can be explained in a logical, coherent manner, of how it fits into one neat package. And scientists can't do that. They're not able to do it. Everything that you can experience or think about in life is all perfectly explained in Prabhupada's books. So anyway, we'll stop here. And we thank you all very, very much for your kind attention and your wonderful questions and comments. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Ki jai.